Do you ever wonder where your food comes from? That's what got us started on this adventure.
We talk to everyone we can to answer the question, what makes the Comox Valley food scene so special? Join us on our culinary exploration of this edible valley.
And welcome back to another episode or a remake of an episode of the Edible Valley podcast. We've been talking about how many episodes we've actually done and all the amazing people we got to talk to. And I thought, what would be more fun than to start from the very beginning with our very first episode with, well, actually, I think it's our second episode, if I remember correctly, because I'm pretty sure everything went sideways on our first episode when we thought this would be perfect to be able to showcase the food and the amazing abundance of everything in our hometown here with my good friend, Blaine Prowse. And unfortunately, the first episode went. And now we started second episode. So what I did is I went through and just sort of give you out there a chance to listen to how we started it all. And I thought before I do that, I would do a little check-in with Blaine. Blaine, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
It's good to be on the air here.
Yeah, it's nice to chat to you a bit. I mean, we brought you back many, many times over the years of the Edible Valley. But did you realize that we started this back in March 2012?
Holy cow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, like a lot has changed. And now we don't even get to do podcasts across from each other.
No, I'm a long ways away from you now.
Yeah, you kind of changed up the scenery a little bit on yourself. So, Blaine, what happened to you since March 2012?
Oh, dear. Let's see. I got married, had a baby who's now going to be 6 in May, left my job, got into a new career where I'm building wooden arrows for traditional archery.
Yes.
And and then this past spring, late spring, we sold our house in Cumberland and we bought property up in Port Clements in Haida Gwaii, packed up the family, and we moved up here.
So you moved to a smaller island?
Yeah, way smaller. It's actually a large island, but way smaller population.
Oh, yeah. And much farther north.
Yeah.
And how are you liking it up there?
It's awesome.
Is it? Good.
Oh, yeah. What's not to love? 2 days ago, I was out on a super fantastic boat, pulling traps, getting prawns and crab. We had some good deer hunting this year, got lots of pink salmon. You know, for only being here for a few months, we have fantastic food in our freezer and we have lots of forest to play in. Met some really wonderful people. So what's not to like? We're pretty happy up here.
Well, we got to catch up the other day, and I thought it was a lot of fun because I've been telling everyone about what you were talking about, what's in your freezer now.
Yeah.
And about how jealous I was.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some pretty good wild food ingredients up here, and that was definitely a part of our decision to come here is the abundance of wild food. And you know, I've always sort of been leaning that way. Well, not always, but for quite a long time towards more, you know, I was like that when I was with Edible Valley doing shows too about sourcing local food and doing that paleo diet stuff.
Yeah.
And now we're up here and we can, you know, if we have a good year, we could harvest potentially all our protein off the land and from the ocean, which is pretty amazing. That's the best food you can find anywhere. So.
Well, I think your freezer is full of all the things that everyone, all those luxuries that everyone dreams of having here. Like you've got what was it, halibut and crab and salmon and all those great
yep.
things up there.
Absolutely. And incredible mushroom foraging too. Like
really?
The amount of yellow chanterelles up here. And I started eating winter chanterelles this year, which I hadn't picked before because I always found them down in the Comox Valley, they were kind of small, but up here, they're probably twice the size of what I was finding back in the Comox Valley. And I started picking those and they're wonderful too. They're a little bit later in the season.
So what are you doing up there?
Today I was sanding drywall.
A little bit of construction work up there, eh?
Yeah, well, the property we bought had a cabin started. It was built 2 years ago, but it never got finished because the fellow who was having it built he had some sort of an illness and he wasn't able to continue and able to come back up here. He's from Northern BC, like Northeast BC. So he's neighbors, this property's neighbors with my friend, and my friend knew we really wanted to get up here. And so he said, well, he didn't really want to, he wanted to potentially buy the property, but he knew we wanted to go. And he's like, why don't you guys just buy the one next door to me? So we were able to make that work out. And we came up here with a really heavy truck and trailer full of all kinds of building materials. And then we put all the rest of our stuff in a sea can, and that came up on a barge. I've been working on this pretty steady since we got here, essentially like the end of July. I went to work and put windows in it and did the plumbing, and I hired out the electrical. I'm doing siding, and now it's insulated and drywalled, and I'll probably start painting next week, and just ordered flooring and gonna have kitchen cabinets showing up soon. And
you'll actually have a home up there.
Yeah. Yep. So
that is
it's been fun project.
Now I want to get onto the project that you really got onto and sort of where people can check you out and see what's happening in your life right now with your arrows.
Yeah, I started doing that back in 2015. Actually, when I came up to Haida Gwaii to go for a deer hunting trip, my neighbor, my friend, who's my neighbor, he invited me up here. We didn't know each other then. And anyway, he starts telling me about how he's making arrow shafts out of Sitka spruce. He knew I was kind of, I had left my job to be a stay-at-home dad, and he knew I was kind of looking for the next sort of path. And he said, have you ever thought about building arrows? And I said, not really, but, you know, I'm kind of interested. So he gave me some information of what he knew about what I would need to get started on it. And so I got home from the hunt, and I was like, maybe I'm going to pursue this. So I bought a bunch of equipment and sort of went for it. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I've learned a lot along the way. And now I'm shipping arrows out to all corners of North America. I sent a set to Japan recently. And
I have to admit, your arrows are beautiful.
Well, thank you.
The amount of effort and what you put into making each one. I guess just for our listeners to know, if they wanted arrows from you, how would they get them?
Go to Instagram, look up Stump Stalker. That's me. That's probably the best way to get me. I'm on there all the time.
That's what I was looking for, your Stump Stalker.
Yep. Yeah, and I've been recently doing some YouTube videos as well of me out shooting stumps. That's why I'm Stump Stalker, because I stalk the stumps in the woods.
Yeah.
And anyway, I've been doing some of that. So I'm doing it sort of as a, just to show the footage of the forest up here, because it's pretty amazing.
I have to admit, I love just watching your videos, and I've been following a few of them now just because, like, it's exciting for me to see. Well, I spent a little bit of time. I spent a month of my life up in Haida Gwaii, and it's one of those places that is just amazing. And it's just beautiful to see the scenery that you were able to capture, even though you're just tromping around in the bush, shooting arrows at stumps. It's pretty impressive to see what you're doing up there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of just something for people to escape their wherever they are, you know. Right now in most of Canada, it's freezing cold and snowing, and up here, you know, last week we had a pretty good cold snap, but the rest of the winter it's been above zero and we haven't had any snow. So I'm able to go out, play in the woods, and it's all green and beautiful and relatively warm. So it's kind of cool for the people in the cold parts of the country to see some green and whatnot. So yeah, it's fun.
That's cool. And how's the food scene up there?
Well, honestly, I don't know, because we haven't been out to eat at all since we've been here, because, well, that's just not our thing. We don't really go out to eat. But then, of course, with all the other things going on in the world these days, to me, going out to dine is kind of awkward right now. So I'm just not really that interested in it. But there is, in Queen Charlotte City, there's a couple of restaurants. One's called Gather. It's kind of a lunch place. And then there's another one called Blacktail, which I've heard great things about. We are actually living in Sandspit right now, which is on Moresby Island. Okay. We're renting a house there. And there's a couple of small sort of food vendors down there that do take out meals a couple times a week kind of thing. But again, we haven't participated, but like you're saying, we got a freezer full of all this delicious food. And
I was going to say, it's probably really hard to go out to a place when you have all this great food right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And my wife, Andy, and I are both, you know, we're pretty reasonable cooks. So to, you know, we can stay home and we can make the food we want to eat without all the added stuff we don't like the vegetable oils and, you know, all that stuff that we try not to eat. So we can make whatever we want at home with
more traditional ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, make up a pan of roasted potatoes my way with pork lard and avocado oil versus canola oil. Right. So
yeah,
the best ever French fries you can eat, and they're actually decent for you instead of the, you know, conventional sort of restaurant stuff.
Yeah. The old canola oil.
Yeah.
I don't want to knock canola oil, but I'm just saying, like, yeah, there's something about lard that has just a beautiful flavor to it, depending on what you're doing, of course, you know, but it has a flavor to it. Yeah.
That's kind of it. There's a lot of people, you know, everybody up here fishes salmon and halibut and lingcod and snapper, and almost everybody hunts deer and picks mushrooms, and it'll be nettle season really soon. I know there's lots of families up here that are baking sourdough bread and stuff like that too. It's, you know, some of those older traditional styles of preparations are, I think they're coming back everywhere because people have been home so much, but there's definitely a scene for that here as well. And that's kind of exciting.
Cause the whole reason we're here is to listen to our very first episode. So I was going to say, did you get a chance to listen to it beforehand?
I didn't. I forgot to check it out, unfortunately.
Well, you'll have to check it out because it's kind of funny because it was pretty monotone.
Yeah, I bet.
And we struggled to try and keep, I think the conversation went, but it was definitely interesting to talk to each other in the old days. And I remember if you remember our first show where everything went sideways and there was the fridge in the background that was wah, wah.
Yeah, we had no idea what we were doing at all.
Yeah. Well, I'm just impressed that this podcast is still going and we're still able to talk to people about the amazing food that's out there. And
absolutely. Yeah.
I guess, do you miss the Comox Valley at all?
Sure. Yeah. I miss, I don't miss the traffic. I don't miss the real estate prices, but I miss family and friends for sure. I miss the farmers, you know, like I had pretty much a standing order for shoot like 7 years with McClintock's about getting a side of beef off them.
Right.
And, so I'm certainly missing that. And, also I'd always buy a side or a whole pig too, for about the same amount of time, 7-8 years.
Oh, we had a great time cleaning those up on your kitchen table.
Yeah, for sure. Like that was awesome. But
getting the kids
now,
off grinding sausage. Yeah.
Yep. In saying that, there's people up here who are raising livestock as well. So it's not that it's not accessible here at all. It's quite a bit more pricey than what you would pay on Vancouver Island. But, you know, it's a ferry trip off, a long ferry trip to go to Vancouver Island to get it. So you weigh in all those costs and it's not so bad actually to buy it here.
Hmm.
So, and another cool thing that I've done this year is I met a young fellow and he's lived in Sandspit his whole life. He's a high school kid and he reached out to me. He's like, "Hey, you want to go hunting?" I said, "Sure." So he took me out and he showed me all sorts of area, helped me get 2 deer. We hit it off really good. And, he's like, "Man, I was telling him about making sausages." He's like, "I've never done that. I'd love to." I was like, "Come on over." So he came over and we spent the day and I taught him how to make sausage. And that was a really cool sort of, you know, he traded some of his experience and I traded him back some of my experience and he got to take home 20 pounds of sausage off one of the deer that we got together. And So that was really neat to share that with the community and his family and whatnot. So,
well, that's great. Well, I'm glad things are going good for you up there.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, if you could one more time, just give me your YouTube and your Instagram account there. So if anyone is interested in seeing what you're doing up in Haida Gwaii and to check out your arrows, and if they're maybe even interested in heading up that way just to see that, because I know as soon as COVID's up, I'm going to come up and visit you up there for sure.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Come up anytime. You're always invited, John. I might put you to work, but...
I'm good with that, because I will help you empty some of that freezer if that's possible.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do a bit of work on the property, plus do some foraging and hunting and fishing.
Sounds like a good vacation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just I'm a Instagram Stump Stalker. I'm pretty sure I'm Stump Stalker on YouTube too. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it's Stump Stalker, and my website stumpstalker.ca if you want to go there too. So pretty much going by that one handle for everything now.
Excellent. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Blaine. And now
I'd like
to put out our very first episode. I've done a little editing to sort of clean it up a little bit, but you can sort of see where our whole podcast came from. And I think what we're going to do over the next little while is just revisit a bunch of our podcasts over the last little while and just give little updates about what's happening in those places. Just because we can't really bring people in and sit down with them, we thought maybe we'll just give them a quick call and just see what's happening, and then we'll see what we think about it. So, excellent. Enjoy.
Yeah, great idea.
Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I am Blaine Prowse.
And I am Jonathan Fraser.
Finally, we're recording.
It's actually about time we finally got this together and are going to actually produce something, I think.
We've been talking about this since last fall and probably early October, and now it's almost the end of March.
And finally, we're sitting down and actually talking about something that we're going to actually put out there for people to listen to. So
hopefully the recording turns out all right.
no fridges, no funny sounds in the background,
and phones ringing, dogs barking.
Yeah, so hopefully this will be enjoyable for everyone, or as enjoyable for us to produce as it is for you to listen to.
So. Yeah, John, you want to say a few things about the Comox Valley and where we're at for the people that are listening outside of British Columbia?
Yeah, well, I think we want to sort of just describe like what this Edible Valley is for us. So being based here in the Comox Valley, you know, located, you know, here in the middle of Vancouver Island on the eastern side, at the base of the Beaufort Mountains here.
Yeah.
It's a very unique area. Sort of, we've got ski hills to the one side of us and the ocean to the other side. So we're really lucky that we can ski, sail, golf, bike, you know, we can do that all in the same day, you know, anything
all year round, pretty near too. Well, except skiing. You can't really ski in the summer.
But you can go pretty close into the summer. I mean, last year they were open for Father's Day on the hill. So
that's right.
It's pretty impressive. They got a nice pack up there just because they get all the rain as it comes down, hits it. So it is a bit wet here. If there's one complaint about this area, is it can be a little wet at times.
Yeah, we're in the Pacific Northwest, so definitely we get our share of rain.
The sacrifices for living in a rainforest. So.
Yeah.
So on that, I think what steps out for both the two of us being connected in this area is that just our greatest resource here is just our land and our waters. Being on an island, you know, surrounded by water, there's an abundance of everything here. I think we're laughing with some of the 75% of oysters and clams or shellfish that are harvested in British Columbia come from this area, which is, you know, a bit mind-boggling. But then, yet you got salmon runs, halibut, cod. It's all around us, so we're lucky to have those foods around us. And being at the base of the mountain range here, and having the Puntledge River, it's a very fertile land. I mean, Comox stands for Land of Plenty, which definitely we have here.
Yeah, we have a whole pile of agricultural land here. I think there's, 200 farms in the Comox Valley?
But, you know, there's new ones popping up.
Yeah.
Left, right, and center. So, I mean, people are getting into this local movement.
Correct, yeah.
So we just thought we want to be on top of it and sort of you know, introduce people to stuff that maybe they didn't know about here.
And for ourselves to learn a little more, too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I live in the food industry, so it's, for me, it's getting out there and finding something new and something interesting to source and put on a menu and serve people.
Well, while we're on the subject, why don't we introduce ourselves? We get too far into this.
Too far into it. Okay.
Strangers to people who are listening in.
Well, this was your idea, Blaine, so I think, you know, you should go off there and just sort of, you know, explain to people how this came to you, because, I mean, it was one of those waking up in the middle of the night things, I believe. And
yeah, kind of.
And I got a phone call the next day, so.
I've been listening to a few podcasts for the last year and a bit, and I like the format of it. And so I thought, well, why can't we do that? It's pretty easy. You just need a microphone and a computer, and you can go to town. So we've been trying, and it's not as easy as we thought it was going to be. But anyways, it's okay. It's been fun. But yeah, I was born and raised in the Comox Valley. Growing up, I wasn't really that interested in food, but my grandfather was a hunter-gatherer, and my whole maternal side of the family was. And so I learned about hunting and fishing from them and eating all sorts of seafood and wild game growing up. And my grandpa had a smokehouse and a big garden, so that seed was planted in me early. And it's starting to come out in me now that I'm an adult and I have my own young child that I'm introducing her to these things too. So, and because of that, I'm a seafood snob. I know exactly what I like and what I don't like, and I don't stray far from it. I'm open to new fish, but not to new areas, I guess. Like, I like to eat my fish from local areas. I don't want to eat anything from outside of basically BC.
Your safety zone?
Yeah. I don't like Asia. I won't eat anything from Asia. Tiger prawns? No, not happening. But I'm also a hesitant foodie. I did work in the restaurant industry for a number of years. And I'm a good prep cook, but I'm not a very good chef. I don't have a lot of creativity in my brain. So this, hopefully this will help me learn a little more about what's out there and what to do with it. Yeah, and I've been raised a meat eater, and my girlfriend's a vegetarian, so that's been a bit of an interesting shift in my consumption of food. And it's balancing out pretty well. I'm doing okay. I don't swing either way. So I'm definitely an omnivore.
Sample a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah. And in my day-to-day life, I'm a sheet metal worker, and I'm crazy about bicycling, commuting on it, touring, mountain biking, camping and hiking, and I take my daughter out to do as many things as I physically can. Yeah, and I'm also a blog writer, thecynicalcyclist.blogspot.com. I've been doing that for a little over a year now. That's been kind of fun too. So that's me in a nutshell. And John, your turn.
All right. I guess a little about myself. I actually was not born in the Comox Valley, but I was born on Vancouver Island in Victoria. I was lucky at a young age. My parents bought a cabin on Hornby Island. So my life really started off on the beaches of Hornby Island every weekend down there, you know, picking clams, oysters, and doing some fishing off the rocks there. Never was the greatest fisherman, but I'd always tried my hardest. So
no, you were not.
Blaine's tried to improve that many a times, and I've failed many of times on him. So,
but you always had fun.
I always had fun, and I definitely love to get out there. And I've always been a person who likes to play with the food that's out there. I mean, as a kid, it's doing the fishing and picking clams and oysters. Not that I was a big fan of oysters at that age. Or even knew what they were all about. It was definitely something I did as a kid. So I still remember my dad's, I call it his famous clam chowder. We'd spend all day picking clams, a 16-liter pail of clams, and we'd steam them all off and make this huge bowl of chowder. And to me, it was the greatest thing in the world. So from there, my dad got a job in Courtney, or the North Island at least, and so we moved to Royston and happened to be across the street from the Kingfisher Inn, so that's really propelled my cooking career, because I sort of looked at it as, oh, there's a job across the street and they'll give me money. So
yeah,
I started off in the dish pit and worked my way up there. I sort of asked the boss for a raise one day, and he said, if you want to, I'll give you a raise, but you have to learn how to toss salads. And it kind of went from there. And I think that's how, the same way for Blaine, because he came in around just a little while after me. And I think the two of us ran that restaurant for a few years together, and very, very little experience, but a lot of heart and a lot of drive to have fun in there. It worked out really well. So I spent a few years and then I moved down to Victoria. And Victoria was all over the place. I bumped through a couple restaurants. The most interesting thing would be when I hit up with the Maple Leaf Adventure Tours and did, which really brought the local thing and the native foods to me, was just sailing up and down the coast on this charter boat. I was a 92-foot schooner with 10 guests on board, and I was the cook on board, so we always had a naturalist who'd go ashore with them and describe what was there and what all the plants were, and they always came back with a bucket of something. And I say something because there was a lot of stuff I had no idea what it was, and they said, you can make something out of this. So
yeah,
there'd be things like long-necked barnacles, and I don't even know what their name is off, but beautiful tender meat inside. But
are you talking about gooseneck barnacles?
Yeah, that's probably, and they're ugly as sin.
Yeah.
The seaweeds they bring me, I've got a bull kelp recipe to die for that I learned from there.
Yeah,
I haven't done it for a lot of years, but that's kind of where my life led. And then after all that, I got a phone call about the Atlas Cafe, that they were looking for a chef, and or that the current chef was stepping down. And to me, it just seemed like the perfect place to go. It was the place that everyone talked about, not only in Courtney, but in Victoria. When I brought the name of the place up, people were excited about it. So I said, I think that's a place I got to be. So yeah, that was 2005, and 7 years later, I'm still there and still enjoying it, even though it's a bit of a nightmare and I work ridiculous amount of hours. When Blaine came to me about the podcast, I was like, that's great, because it'll actually get me out of the kitchen and back out into the world to sort of see where the food's coming from. Also, with the joint coming back to the Comox Valley and starting at the Atlas Cafe, I got myself sort of involved with the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association. So that's sort of my second hat I wear. Currently, I'm the vice president. Elections are coming, so I'm going to move into another position. I don't know which one yet. I'm hoping it's not president, because that's a lot of responsibility. So it's giving me a chance, and it's actually been great, because it's allowed me to keep connected to the chefs in town. Our organization has really gone a local route, and it's really to connect with the farmers and the people in the community and what we have out there. We put together a cookbook, The Island Inspiration, which was a learning experience in its own. And so that's how I came to back to the Comox Valley. And so that's a little bit about myself. So this is sort of the next extension, I think, of what I want to do. I found with the Atlas Cafe has really allowed me to sort of showcase the Comox Valley. If you like to get out there a little bit more and spread my voice, get out of the kitchen and get some fresh air.
Yeah. I see you're learning to use Twitter now, too.
I've tried Twitter. I try and tweet. I'm a bit of a twit. So it doesn't always come out right. But it's something I'm working on, just getting out there and talking to people. I'm not a person who likes to come out of my kitchen. It's always a awkward situation. I mean, it's nice to go out to tables and talk to people, but it's not my first response when someone would like to see me. So
yeah,
but I love having people come back to the kitchen and saying thank you for the meal, so that's always fun. So
that's cool. Yeah, there was one memorable time when we were young cooks and we had to go out to a table. I don't think I want to finish the story, but they were praising us on our meal that we cooked so deliciously, and yeah,
I think we could not accept that we were chefs and that we were still just dishwashers at that time.
Yeah.
We worked under some great people, so.
We we flew by the seat of our pants too and threw something out that was we weren't prepared for, but we did it anyway.
And we definitely hit the spot for them.
So, yeah, yeah, they were happy. That was our oyster. Was it our month of shellfish or something?
Well, yeah, because we were talking about how it was either January or February is one of the best times because the water's cold.
Yeah.
So the oysters are at their best, and so we decided to have an oyster fest special, like our schnitzel festival.
Yeah.
Schnitzel madness it was, that's it.
Yeah, the restaurant was always dead, so we brought it up to the chef, and he said, well, if you guys want to do it, you make the menu. But, eh.
That was probably one of my first menus I think I ever had to create. So
over a few pints in the pub at night, we sat there and came up with 10 items or so. And
10 separate ones. Oyster Florentine, Oyster Casino, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, Rockefeller.
Yeah.
I can't even remember the rest of them. There were so many. Probably a Mediterranean.
Yeah. I don't know if we how well we did. I don't really remember, but
yeah.
I think it was all right.
That's a long time ago.
That was fun.
So I guess the next thing we should just go up on is what we actually hope to do with the Edible Valley, like where we hope to go. I mean, I have my dreams of what I'd like to do, and I don't know, they're probably the same as yours, but we should let everyone know.
Yeah, I think just to create a network and a place for people to come to, and for John and I sort of become a resource for people to turn to. Mm-hmm. To get information about things, be it just when's the farmer's market or where do I go to get honey or those types of things. So that's kind of how I would like to kind of just be a useful resource for people and learn about more about what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, there's so many festivals in town. That are going on, and so much. We have the Shellfish Festival. This year they're going to have the first Flavor Festival, which will be basically along the lines of the Victoria's Feast of Fields. So I'm hoping 40 vendors,
right,
with a little sample of everything. So there's lots and lots of food going on here.
Yeah, right.
And I really look at this as such a neat little area. I mean, I look at down south in Victoria, it's just sticking on the island. The Cowichan Valley has such a strong name for itself.
Right.
And its farm and its community has come together so much, but I think the Comox Valley has much more to offer. And I think our agriculture and our cooks and our chefs in this community actually have something to offer, you know, the world. I think there's something here. There's a lot of people who are really passionate about what they do and really enjoy doing what they do here. So
yeah, I'd say I shouldn't probably say this because I don't know, but I'd be glad to believe that we have higher end restaurants in Courtney than they do down in Cowichan and Duncan.
We have some really good restaurants.
There's some really interesting places to eat here.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Duncan, I mean, they may have it too. I just have no experience with it, so.
Don't get down there. There's a couple nice eateries down there, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's great places all over Vancouver Island.
Yeah.
I mean, Victoria's got amazing restaurants. Tofino's got some really top-notch places. I mean, you can basically, there's a couple places in each community. I like the fact here in the Comox Valley that a lot of our restaurants are very, very close. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of camaraderie,
right,
between the restaurants out there. I mean, especially myself being with the Chefs Association, I meet up with a lot of the chefs at least monthly, and it's a good time just to sort of chat and say, hey, what are you guys doing, and how's business, and what do you think about this? We just finished up with a dine around Comox Valley, which was a lot of fun. Not really.
This made you busier.
Just me. It's just more of a challenge, right?
Yeah.
I ran two menus where everyone else ran one.
Right.
So I did a 25 and a 35. But it was good, and I think the response from people was quite favorable. So.
Cool.
So, and it's neat, so that I think we're going to have an opportunity to get in and talk with some of the chefs and see what they like to do and how they like to do, and I hope that would be interesting to people.
Yeah, I want to get out to some of the farms, too, and it would be neat to eventually get ourselves set up with some video recording equipment, more than just our iPhones, so we can go out and take video of the farms, and we can show you know, the passion that the producers have for what they're doing, the husbandry of the animals, the just to see the field, see a carrot come out of the ground right from, you know, so-and-so's farm, that it's going to your restaurant to go on your plate.
And it's hard. I mean, the problem with this area is that the price of property is very expensive. So to use it for farmland is extremely expensive.
Yes.
So it kind of drives up the price of the food and the products here. But I think we're kind of lucky that there are such great foods out here. We do have a shorter growing time than, say, California.
Yeah, or absolutely, Florida, yeah.
Or Mexico.
Yeah.
But I think we have what we can do with it is quite interesting. I mean, the fact that we have a couple of vineyards in town now, actually we have more than a couple.
Yeah, three or four.
Three or four. It's kind of neat because all the different food aspects are coming together. It's almost a little European in style.
Right. Will,
you know, you have your cheese factory, your butcher, you have your vineyards. We have a distillery.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just like being on the front edge of the food here and being connected with everyone here.
Yeah, it's good. I also would like to do a little hunting and gathering too, maybe post some videos on mushroom picking, berry picking, smoking salmon, doing that processing stuff, because that's what I'm really into. I spent all last weekend and I did, I think, about 30 pounds of salmon smoked and canned. So that's something that I'm really interested in, and hopefully I can get a YouTube channel up maybe, and we can have videos on different things like that and just some how-to stuff. And
I'd like to learn how to grow something. I'm very good at killing things. I like finished product. I don't like starting with bare product.
Yeah.
So every year I dig up a garden in my backyard and I rototill it, and I get a few tomatoes and a few carrots, but I think there's... And I look next door to my neighbor who... Downtown Courtney with a greenhouse. And the amount of food he can produce out of his backyard always blows my mind. He's got kale and fresh greens and zucchinis and I've gotten to the point that I'm buying stuff off him because it's got cheap. It's better. I can buy salad greens off him and they last for like a week.
Nice.
I'm like going to the supermarket and I get that head of lettuce that I have to eat that day because it's dead the next day. So
yeah,
it's great. And it's small gardening. That I think that's something that's really neat out there too. So
yeah,
it's not the big time farms. It's amazing what you can produce with a little bit of sweat equity and some effort, right?
So. Yeah, simple gardening. It's like simple living. Just do everything on a smaller scale, right. And you don't need to have 300 acres to produce a market garden. You can do it on a quarter acre lot in town.
Well, I'm definitely getting to that slower food, simpler food, trying not to make everything so complex.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
And let the food stand by itself, and the flavor of each vegetable or cut of meat kind of stand on its own, rather than drowning it in sauces and steaming the vegetables to death and things like that.
Really enjoying it. And keeping it simple.
Yeah.
Hopefully with this cast we can do that. We can get out there. We'll get in. I know there's a lot of farmers that I've talked to that are interested in talking with us, and we'll get the chefs on board. And so I think really we're going to turn this community into a really agricultural-based area with everything. I mean, our farmer's market is incredible. It's a bit of tough to get in there because it's only local stuff.
That's right.
And it's a bit pricey, but you pay for good food. So.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a little bit about us. Yeah. A little bit about the Edible Valley.
Yeah.
So I guess we just want to ask everyone out there if there's something you want. There's something you're interested in, you can email us, or I guess email us is probably be the best.
Email, yeah.
Or give us a tweet.
Yeah. At Edible Valley.
Edible Valley. Twitter.
We'll have a Facebook page up shortly. And our email address is ediblevalley@gmail.com. So we'd like to hear your feedback and let us know what you'd like to hear, and keep us honest and make us work.
That's what we'd like to do.
All right, then. Thanks for tuning in, and hopefully you'll hear from us again in the near future.
All right.
Bye now.
Good night.
And that wraps up another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and a special thanks goes to the local businesses that help support our podcast. They make it possible for us to showcase your local food community. We'd love you to follow us on your preferred social media at Edible Valley, where you can check out our blog, find recipes and tips, behind the scenes, and of course keep a lookout for where we are going to turn up next in your Edible Valley.
Cool. Thanks, Blaine.
Yeah, no problem.
All right.
That was easy. Yeah. It was a lot easier to talk now than it used to be 8 years ago, huh?
Oh, no doubt. Remember our first times? You're just like, you got to listen to that first episode.
I'm going to listen to it right now after we're done here.
As soon as we're done, just listen to it because you're like,
And this has been...